Welcome to Thing Making, an audio podcast for, about, and by people who make things. Okay, so today on Thing Making, I'm talking with Jo Blank from A Blank Canvas. Welcome, Jo.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm very good. I'm cold. I'm sitting here, well, we are sitting here in Jo's workshop, which is huge and full of some really, really interesting things that he's working on. One of them is a group of fireflies. Do you want to tell us about the fireflies, Jo?
Yeah, they're a large pole rod puppet, approximately 1.5 metres in length. They're operated off a big, long black painter's pole, extendable painter's pole, and they fly and change colours. There's lots of LEDs controlled by like a wireless controller that change colours and strobe and bounce along to music. And
wow. So the puppeteers are underneath them, holding them up on long poles.
Yep.
Obviously, they've got to be light. And they've got to be functional. They've got to do all these amazing whiz-bang things.
Yep.
So how do you find that good balance between, you know, the function of what that puppet has to do, as well as the beauty and the special effects that you can bring to that puppet?
Yeah, it's a bit of a juggling act. You kind of got to work from the final result and work backwards. I like to figure out everything that needs to do and then figure out the right materials, the lightweight, but it's got to be durable. So I use a lot of aluminium and PE30 foam, carved foam, which is what I'm using on the fireflies.
Do you think it helps when you're a puppet designer and maker that you actually operate puppets as well, because you have some kind of understanding of what it feels like to work in a festival, for example, holding up a puppet for long periods of time and navigating crowds and and so on?
I think it's valuable, and I think it's, I've been lucky to have that training and experience, because anything that you're holding up for a long amount of time, even if it's a can of anything, if it's a 1 kilo above your head after 20 minutes, it's weighs like a ton of bricks.
Exactly, exactly. You need good muscles to be a puppeteer.
Yeah.
Talking about materials, and some of the materials that you work with are obviously aluminium. You're working with lighting as well, LED lighting. You're working with inflatables as well.
Mm-hmm.
Foam.
Yep.
Latex.
Yep. Foam, latex. Silicons.
Mm-hmm.
I like anything gooey and that kind of thing. So yeah, I like to mix it up. It's great. I feel blessed that I've got the opportunity to play with so many different materials, and I'm interested in that kind of stuff. So I'm constantly finding new materials and new ways of doing things. And a lot of the time, I'm using materials that they're not meant to be used for.
Okay. So when you talk about, just go back to the gooey business with materials that are gooey.
Yep.
What is it about the gooiness that you like?
Oh, I don't know. Just chemicals and chemical reactions, I guess. I trained as a paint chemist way back when, making paint at Scenic Studios. At first I hated the idea that that I was going to be making paint, because I really wanted to get out the floor and paint backdrops. But we didn't have much work, and the paint chemist there finished up, and so I had the opportunity to either finish up or learn how to make paint. So I did, and I just learned a lot about what chemicals do, what goes into paint, or the resins and acticides and thickeners and all these chemicals that make up paint. which is majority water and a few different chemicals and pigments, but just that kind of, I think that probably started me off as wanting to know more about what you can do and how far you can push things.
Mm-hmm.
Using latexes and silicons and and that kind of stuff.
A lot of puppeteers have talked to me about, particularly puppet makers, about how sometimes the material dictates what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Have you had that experience of working with particular material, and say there's been an accident or something's happened during the course of, say, mixing up chemicals together that then gives you a different opportunity, I suppose, than one that you might not have been expecting?
Yeah, I've come across a lot of those accidents that have turned into things that I've built from materials that I've tried to dry fast and ended up melting and creating an amazing skin effect, or mixing something up to a batch of latex or something that's thickened up too much, and I've been able to use it as a texture or a membrane or something like that. It's all that playing around with materials, then you discover new things. And pushing them where you shouldn't. Like if they're designed, I go into a paint shop all the time and order things, and they say, "What do you want to use that for?" And just say, "Don't worry. It's I don't want to get into it, because usually what I'm using them for isn't what they're designed to do.
It's not a conventional use of different material itself, which is interesting because it leads to new discoveries, which I think a lot of people are not aware of, that what you're doing is really quite scientific.
Yep.
And also artistic, so you're being open to new discoveries through working with material, and new applications for those discoveries in terms of, say, a puppet skin or membrane, as you said.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of people aren't aware of what's happening. Maybe there needs to be some kind of Nobel Prize for puppet makers who are making all these discoveries.
It's pretty rare that you ever make something that you've made before.
Right.
So you're constantly, you may have made something similar, but you're always doing something. I think that's the greatest thing about what I do, is it's always new and it's a challenge. And you may think in your head that it's going to work out this way, but it's not until you start making it you come up with all these challenges along the way.
Yeah.
And it's that balance of finding the lightest material that's as durable and flexible and waterproof and all those things combined you might think when you start, oh, it's got to be this material, but once you get going you realize that it's going to change.
So you make maquette and you make you design, obviously you've got drawings and then you make smaller models and then to scale something bigger. And so what are some of the creatures and some of your most favorite things that you've built?
The process that I've gone through is sketching and then 3D printing a model and then taking patterns off that. We did a turtle for Cirque du Soleil, which we modeled up a big turtle, and we made a big chassis that housed everything inside it and travelled on these kind of off-road rubber wheels. It housed all the batteries and the fans and everything inside it. That was a fun project. I've built some mascots for Coles. We did some fiberglass carbon fiber heads, giant heads, so they had to be super lightweight. But mucking around with fiberglass and carbon fiber and stuff is fun to do.
So to be a puppet maker, you really have to be almost a chemist, an engineer.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I'll get people in who are more skilled than I am as well, which I love collaborating on projects. So I feel like I'm a bit of a jack of all trades and master of none. but when you've got a project and there's the budget for it, I love to collaborate on projects and get Most of the time, we've got to get an engineer to knock up some drawings
Right, yeah.
as well. So, getting someone in like that, and then fabricators or costume maker or electrical engineer to do all the wiring, stuff like that. So.
And you perform with some of the puppets that you've made, and other people perform with them too. What's it like to perform with the material that you've been working on and you've made a puppet,
Yep.
then to perform with it? Do you still find fault with what
Oh,
you've made,
every
or
time. Yep. Yeah, I think that's a really great thing, opportunity to be able to perform with your puppet, but also a curse as well, because as soon as you start using it, you go, oh, I could have made it better, I could have made it this way, and there's usually no time or budget to take it back to the workshop. But it's good to know these things, because the next time around, and it's regardless, like, the client's usually always very pleased with the result. But in my mind, I'm always thinking of newer, lighter materials or different ways to do things. But
What new technologies have you used in your work? Because I know you mentioned that you use LED lighting and projection mapping.
yep.
So what are some of the other new tech? You use 3D
3D
printing.
printing's a great tool. Yeah.
So do you design something on CAD or some sort of computer software, print it out in a 3D form into a small maquette, and then take a pattern and make it bigger. So there's a range of technologies that you're using there.
Definitely. The 3D printing is a great tool to get a really finished model. I use ZBrush a lot, because it's a really loose sculpting program, where it's like using clay. You can push clay around on the computer, but it's also a great tool to present to a client as well, and give them a really crisp three-dimensional product that they can look at and spin around and hold in their hand to go, yep, that's exactly what I want on a larger scale. And
And
you
you can
can,
send a 3D model to
yeah,
their 3D printer, so you can communicate globally with the client
totally,
and they get a 3D model of something in some other part of the world.
Even if it doesn't get to the 3D printing stage, just having a virtual model that you can bring up on your computer, and you can send that file across the other side of the world in seconds. And then they can open up that file, they can spin it around, they can zoom in, and then you can have those conversations where, can you make the head bigger or the feet smaller or whatever, and you can change those things instantly, rather than re-sculpting out of clay, or you can change colors, all
And you
those
could put it
things.
in the space that it might end up performing in as well.
Exactly. Drop it, Photoshop it into in the middle of Fed Square, or on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, or anything like that.
It's pretty exciting because some of that stuff is coming thick and fast, and so you're learning software as you go, as new software all the time that will help you in your job, or maybe using a range of different software and new technologies to create the one product.
I'm still a bit old school as well, so I like to sketch out all my designs, and then build from that. But I think, yeah, 3D modeling programs and stuff is really, and Photoshop, it's a great tool to really paint a really intricate picture of what you're trying to get across the line, or to pitch to the client that may not know exactly what they want, as well, till they kind of see it. And you can give them multiple versions, multiple colors, to choose from, which is really easy and really fast.
And match their corporate colors to something in the mascot, for example, that you're designing. And with all this new technology, how do you find the balance? As you said, sometimes you like to sketch it out. How do you find the balance between that hands-on skill that you have as a maker, where you use your hands to make things, and the technology? And when do you switch from one to the other?
I guess I usually the 3D 3D technology comes very early on in the piece, just to kind of get the job happening and getting the designs approved. But then once it goes from that, usually I think it's mostly all hands on from there, whether it's sculpting. But we have done, we've taken that model and got them to send it to a guy who can route it out at a styrene. So we sent it to a company that used that same model that we've got approval from the client, and then send it to a company that will route it out of a big block of foam, and it'll be exactly the right scale and exactly, rather than hand sculpting something.
Wow, so that, and that's pretty exciting too. And is that done in Australia? Is
it's a local company, not far from here that we deal with. And saying that, I do like just getting in as hand sculpting as well, depending on the job, if it needs to be really slick and perfect. And if it was, say, hard lines or very architectural, you'd probably get it routed. But if it's a organic shape, if it was a tree or something like that, we did a bunch of stuff for the Jurassic World exhibition, and that was all hand sculpted rocks and trees and tree stumps and roots and stuff like that. It was all hand sculpted.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it didn't need to be.
And it's funny how, you know, when you go to see, say, the Jurassic World exhibition, I think a lot of people might not know that some of those trees are actually hand sculpted, which takes a lot of time and money in a developed country, because it's labour costs that are involved in hand sculpting pieces that are still quite intricate. They don't often know that, whereas they do if they see a puppeteer operating the puppet, and I think they appreciate that. I sometimes think it would be great to have that knowledge of when I go and see, say, something that's hand sculpted and handmade, that it is handmade and who the artist might actually be, because there's a lot of skill involved in that.
Yeah.
That we don't often get, you know, puppeteers don't get credit for.
Yeah.
And I think people, the audience, do appreciate it when they know how something's operated and how something is made.
Yeah.
So I know that you've been actually posting up on Instagram, and we can give people the link to your Instagram account so they can see some of the drawings and designs for the fireflies, for example, that you're making.
Mm.
And you mentioned earlier that you've had a lot of likes. So do you think there's something in that appreciation of people knowing how something is made?
Definitely, absolutely. I think the way kids appreciate a puppet for its pure magical end of it, but more adults will appreciate the making of it and how it's constructed, and as much as it is a beautiful thing to look at, I think people are fascinated by that, and that's why I've been posting this process, because you know, the amount of the workshops or studios I've been in, when people just come in and they just want to watch you make it or watch you paint it.
I've done
outdoor murals where people would just stand there for hours and just watch you paint.
Yes, yeah.
And I've been taught how to do these things, and if I haven't been shown how to do them, I wouldn't know anything that I know now. So it's nice to show a little bit of behind the scenes of how things are constructed. And
yeah, I know Lev Manowitz, who's a media theorist, he talks about the new genre being the making of genre, so that he's talking about film and video, but that now we enjoy the making of The Lord of the Rings, for example, or something like this, that this is the new genre, that people do want to experience behind the scenes or the making of something as a way to gain knowledge about how something is done, because a lot of the time things are now, the process is now hidden. And that there is that balance, I guess, that balance between what is seen on stage or in the making of something and what's unseen. And more with new technologies, things are unseen.
Yeah.
And so people still want to find the backstory, the process. And so they can do that with your work. And I think that's a wonderful thing that you're doing, is posting up some of designs, I think no longer are artists hidden in their secret laboratories or workshops.
Let's show what goes behind the scenes. Yeah, I think we've come full circle because we used to have been such a long time trying to make things so realistic, and from puppetry and film and theatre that we've gone into that CG world.
Yes.
And then it's coming back around again, and everything's being handmade, and puppets are coming back into films and stuff now, which is fantastic. And it's not so much about making it so realistic that it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's about knowing that it's unreal, but still going along for the ride.
Yeah, which is really one of the strengths of the puppet, isn't it, is that we know it's not real, but we suspend our disbelief because we want to experience this magical thing.
Yep.
And even as adults, there is still that desire to kind of have that experience of wonder or magic in a way, and which is achieved in special effects in film quite easily, I think, with CGI. But again, with the puppet, we know it's not real. So how far can we push that line between something that's not real and something that kind of looks like it's really alive, I guess? Because you've worked on some really big projects, haven't you? Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the projects that you've worked on?
So I guess one big puppet we made was for the World Cup opening ceremony, which was a huge 5.5 metre cricket player, which was operated by 9 puppeteers.
Fantastic. Can people see that on your website?
Yeah, they can, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'll post the link with this blog so people
sure.
can have a look at the cricket player in action.
Yeah, and he's still here in the workshop at the moment. But it was all the mechanics and that was all external of the body, and the puppeteers are on the arms are on rods, and you could see the puppeteers. They were in black, but you could still see them quite clearly.
Yeah.
He was lit up with LEDs, internal LEDs and external LEDs, and changed colours. And he was a bit of a magical 5 minutes. He came out on stage and a wave to the crowd, and just the roar of the crowd in the audience was pretty amazing to witness and feel that. It's just a nice reward of working on that to see him kind of come out on stage and have a bat and hit a big cricket ball, and the fireworks went off, and it was a pretty
fantastic.
Nice one. But everything was, you could see that it wasn't real, or but it didn't matter. It was just an impressive puppet.
Yeah, great for stadiums, great for big outdoor events like Olympic Games ceremonies or World Cup ceremonies. And what do you think is the future for the work, the kind of work that you do? Is it more of the same? Is it more big spectacle things, or is it almost going full circle back to handmade, smaller?
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I've been doing a lot of work for marketing and advertising products and companies that that more money is being spent on getting their brand out to the public, whether it's a viral video that happens from that they'll invest a lot of money into a 2 month build of a installation of some sort that may only be shown for a couple of days, but the the social media that comes into it afterwards that they can put on their website and Facebook pages and stuff like that. So I've been doing a lot of puppets and installations for that kind of world, which has been interesting. It's always pretty wacky, but there's lots of theatre's pretty huge in Melbourne at the moment, so I've been doing lots of stuff for that, and some films, short films and stuff, so
there's always things to keep you busy enough in a range of different mediums. I'd like to finish up with a question that I ask, I've been asking different puppeteers and puppet makers, which is about material. And so I ask them, what's your favourite material and why?
I do like working with silicone. It's got a great properties. It's flexible and lasts for a very, very long time. It's nice to paint. It's probably not great for you, so I wouldn't want to use it all the time. But I do like making puppets and suits out of silicon. I think that's probably there's always new products coming out as well. So I'm always on the hunt for the latest version. That's kind of sort of more flexible and lasts longer.
Less toxic.
So it's good though. But what I do is I never really use anything for that long. Whether it's cutting some MDF or using silicone or using fiberglass. If I was doing it all the time, I would probably absolutely hate it. But
it wouldn't be that healthy.
Yeah, because I don't use it that often. I do enjoy using it when I do.
You like the gooey stuff.
I do like goo.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks very much for talking.
No problem.